This podcast is brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. Whether you're a budding small business owner or a large company looking for a new space, a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors, can help you find the right place to grow. So get what your business needs. Get Realtor.
This is Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome, I'm Charlie Turner in New York. Coming up, The Wall Street Journal's Katie Bindley offers some tips on how riders can better enjoy the Uber and Lyft experience. First, here are some tech headlines. If you happen to be house hunting, how would you like it if a robot showed you a home? A new crop of companies is introducing technology they say will reshape how property is rented and sold. By using robots to do some of the tasks that people normally handle, such as showing properties, creating floor plans, and shooting video of homes, these firms hope to bring a leaner, more efficient approach to the traditional real estate business. Brokerage REX places a robot in each seller's home that answers property questions and collects data from people touring the homes. Virtual APT invented a robot that makes three-dimensional property videos, and property manager Zen Places robots allow agents to communicate remotely through a screen rather than having to drive around showing properties. Toyota says it'll spend nearly $3 billion to build software for autonomous cars. As it creates the new software company, Toyota's nearing a self-imposed deadline of 2020 for selling cars that can pilot themselves on freeways and city streets. A civil lawsuit by a former employee accuses YouTube of ending hiring last year of white and Asian males for technical positions because they didn't help the world's largest video site achieve its goals for improving diversity. The lawsuit, filed by Arne Wilberg, a white male who worked at Google for 9 years, including 4 years as a recruiter at YouTube, alleges the division of Alphabet set quotas for hiring minorities. Next up, how to get the best out of Uber and Lyft. This is Tech News Briefing from The Wall Street Journal.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We'd like to know more about you, our listeners, and your thoughts on our podcast. Head to wsj.com/survey and help us improve our podcasts.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Several years ago, Americans fell in love with rideshare companies like Uber and Lyft because they were a great alternative to taxis, limos, and owning or renting a car. The Wall Street Journal's Katie Bindley writes that the honeymoon is over because the rideshare experience has become more complicated than tapping on Uber's app and having the car appear in a matter of minutes. Katie joins us from San Francisco with why rideshare has become more complicated, and she has tips and explanations to help improve the ridesharing experience. First, Katie, could you tell us why the honeymoon is over?
Well, there's just, for starters, there's so many more options to sort through. If you pull up, the ride menu on either Lyft or Uber, there's anywhere between like 5 and 8 different options in some big cities. So even just sorting through like, okay, what's the difference between a shuttle versus a line for Lyft or a pool versus a pool express for Uber can be like a little confusing. Sorting out even which of the two apps to use depending on what type of ride is available, what the fare is on each of those, what the estimated time is. And especially with these lines and pools, like it's great because you save some money, but I feel like in a lot of ways, the mapping algorithms aren't always doing the best thing for you in the sense that you could, pick someone up on your way, but it's not really at all on your way. And you might end up sitting in traffic for a long time. And then your ETA can all of a sudden jump by, several minutes and you end up, being late.
Sounds like growing pains for these companies.
A little bit. I mean, there's also like Uber, especially in the last year, has implemented a ton of different changes that, are supposed to make the experience better for both the passenger and definitely for the drivers as well. They've changed some things about Uber Pool. They're trying to make ratings more transparent so that people have a better idea of what 4 versus 5 stars mean, which sounds like something that should be very self-explanatory, but actually isn't. If you eat at a restaurant on Yelp that's got 4 stars, you would think that means that it's very good. Whereas with Uber and Lyft, 4 stars actually means that like something went wrong with your ride, and they want you to say what went wrong.
One of your tips is basically, as you say, 5 stars or bust. Anything less than 5 stars, you should avoid.
Well, you should just reserve it for if something was really wrong. Like, I, you know, lived in New York for 10 years and was constantly taking cabs or the subway. And when I got to San Francisco and started taking Uber and Lyft on a regular basis, my assumption was that 5 stars would be for some when they kind of like went above and beyond. That's not at all what it means. 5 stars means it was like a really good ride.
Good.
And maybe nothing out of the ordinary happened. It was just a regular ride. Whereas 4 stars would mean, okay, something was really wrong with this ride and needs to be flagged as an issue.
Katie, I'm not a user of these ride shares, but you've really tested them out. I get the impression that a huge problem for riders is Uber or Lyft drivers canceling a ride. They're not supposed to cancel based on destination, but some still do.
Well, so the companies say that this isn't much of an issue, but if you talk to people who take the services regularly from, say, airports trying to go to a suburb or from a suburb somewhere else, they will tell you that they do get canceled on. So what happens? This actually had not happened to me personally, but it did happen to me on Monday while I was finishing up the piece. So I, landed at the San Francisco airport and ordered a Lyft. And within a few minutes, the guy called me and asked me where I was going. And when I said I was going to the city, it was very muffled and I could barely hear him. But he just said that like that wasn't going to work for him. And so he asked me to cancel the ride, which depending on the time frame of when you cancel, there's a chance I could get charged a fee for having canceled. So you don't want to agree to cancel when they ask you to. You want to make sure that they do the canceling so that you wouldn't incur a fee depending on the time frame of the cancellation.
You briefly mentioned Uber pools and Lyft lines, the rides you share with other passengers. What should riders know before they share a ride with someone else?
Just that the timing is often not, sometimes it is exactly as it says it will be, but often the time is going to fluctuate. I took a Lyft line to work the other day, and my commute is like a straight shot down one particular busy street. But once I got in, we picked up 2 more people, which is what you're agreeing to when you sign up for one of these. But it took me pretty significantly out of my way. So in this case, there wasn't a ton of traffic where it worked out fine. But if you do end up sitting in a ton of traffic, it can be frustrating. But you're saving money. So you just want to make sure that you're weighing how much time you have versus how much you want to spend. And then one thing that I did try that I actually thought was really good for if you are commuting and you do live near relatively major streets is to check out both Lyft Shuttle and Uber Express Pool. They're currently only available in select cities. But in this case, I walked about, maybe it was about a 5-minute walk to meet my driver. And then we were on California Street in San Francisco, which is, Main Street, picked up 2 people who were both ready, standing at the stop. We didn't go additional blocks out of our way to get them. We picked them up and then we continued on the street. And then the 3 of us all got out together at one stop and we each walked a couple of blocks to our destination. If this sounds similar to like a bus, it's kind of similar to a bus route, except you're just in a car. But it's, they've got these routes mapped out that are more, can be in many cases much more efficient than what happens when you share a ride with people who are getting dropped off door to door.
There are problems with drivers taking bad routes. Is this the subject of much quibbling between drivers and passengers?
Speaking for myself, I have a personal gripe with drivers taking the Broadway tunnel in San Francisco at like 9:30 in the morning because there has been construction going on for months and months, and you can sit in that tunnel for probably 25 minutes, but GPS will say that it's the fastest route. This is actually not... It's in a lot of cases, it's not the driver's fault because the GPS will tell them that this is the fastest route. A driver I was chatting with while I was reporting, and this we were taking a separate route, but all of a sudden his GPS just cut out and it like froze. And so he missed the turn that he needed to take. And we had to go around, in a circle of one-way streets, in the middle of kind of rush hour traffic at 6 p.m. Not his fault.
Right. I see. But isn't the best practice, I guess, there, if you pretty much know where you're going, is to yell at the driver and say, no, forget the GPS. Take this route.
They don't tend to like that. That was one of the things that I came across reason.
They give you a bad rating.
Yeah. A lot of drivers say, look, I generally give people 5 stars unless something really bad happens. But I did read on a few forums that drivers will knock off a star for being a backseat driver and saying, turn left here, turn right here.
Wall Street Journal reporter Katie Binley still navigating San Francisco. Katie, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
And that's Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Charlie Turner in New York.
Join the Wall Street Journal May 8th through the 10th in New York City for our first ever Future of Everything Festival. This three-day event will bring together innovators and experts with ambitious leaders, entrepreneurs, and students who are all shaping the future. The festival will include 12 themed sessions covering the future of money, cities, medicine, artificial intelligence, food, transportation, and more. Attendees will hear from over 80 renowned speakers and visionaries, including PayPal CEO Dan Shulman and international chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov, with access to innovative product demos, exhibits, and unique experiences throughout New York City. To learn more and buy tickets, visit us at foefestival.wsj.com.